With the elections right around the corner, a question needs to be asked. How should Christians engage with civil government? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to this Monday edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And with me today, as usual, but especially today, is my Vice Chairman and good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Glad to be with you again today, Barry.
Well, I'm glad to have you here today, Chuck, because the topic we're talking about today, I've got a hat tip to you, because what we're going to be talking about, ladies and gentlemen, is the idea of how we as believers should interact with governing authorities. Now, I'm sure that the vast majority of us out there, in one form or another, whether we're just registered to vote and we vote, or whether you contact your congresspeople, or you talk to your state elected officials, or maybe that you might even serve yourself, maybe in a local office, sooner or later, each of us as believers are faced with, how am I supposed to interact with civil government? Now, for the vast majority of people, the answer has usually been, well, since government's ordained of God, we're to submit to government. But is that the whole story? And the vast majority of us would turn and think, first of all, of a famous passage in the New Testament that from one of the letters of Paul, specifically the letter to the Romans. Romans, starting in chapter 13, verse 1. And it says this: "Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God, and the powers that be are ordained of God. Whosoever therefore resisteth the power resisteth the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves condemnation. For magistrates are not to be feared for good works, but for evil. Wilt thou then be without fear of the power? Do well, so shalt thou have praise of the same. For he is the minister of God for thy wealth. But if thou do evil, fear. For he beareth not the sword for naught, for he is the minister of God, to take vengeance on him that doeth evil. Wherefore ye must be subject, not because of wrath only, but also for conscience' sake. For this cause ye pay also tribute, for they are God's ministers, applying themselves for the same thing. Give to all men therefore their duty, tribute to whom ye owe tribute, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom ye owe honor. Owe nothing to any man but to love one another, for he that loveth another hath fulfilled the law." And that's Romans 13, verses 1 through 8. Now, Chuck, that's traditionally when we're talking with folks and we talk about Christians and being involved with government, you usually get one of three types of responses. The first response, or what I consider to be the old traditional response, is, well, politics is dirty and Christians shouldn't be involved in that or have anything to do with it. The second response is, Romans 13, God ordained the authorities, and therefore, whatever they do, we're supposed to obey them. Then there's the third response, and that's what I want to talk about today, because I feel the first two are very inadequate from a biblical worldview standpoint. And I know that you specifically have studied in this area and have actually written a policy briefing on this, on a Christian's look at Romans 13, which, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to, you can go to our website at principledpolicy.com and you can download that for yourself. But Chuck, I wanted to give you some time to talk about that and to share with some folks the thoughts here.
Well, it's interesting that we're discussing this because there is so much going on. We're on the eve of presidential election year, and there are a lot of things, both good and bad, going on in the political arena, and we need to discuss really this little passage, because it has been both used and abused to bring in all kinds of, frankly, terrible ideas into the Christian worldview. Some of those ideas being things like anyone who sits in an office is automatically God's anointed and is God's exact choice about for who he wants to be sitting in that office. Now, you and I are both Reformed, and so we both understand that God's decree is what comes to pass. But we also know that sometimes the people who sit in an office by that decree are not there because they're the best person who could be sitting in the office. They're they're there for purposes of a judgment against the people.
Exactly. I think that's one of the things that a lot of our friends misinterpret about Romans 13 is that only those who do good or who are what we consider pro-family or pro-life are those who are the ministers of God. But actually, it's not those who are who agree with us, and it's not necessarily even those who maybe oppose some of those things that we hold near and dear that are ministers of God, because I would argue neither one of those are truly a Romans 13 minister of God unless they do something a little something more than just agree or be adhering to a certain set of platform principles.
Well, that's right. And in this article that I wrote, what I should do is give a little illustration that I gave in the early part of the article to show what the problems are with the interpretation, because I have right in front of me the article that I wrote, and I will not read it out of the, I did not do it in a Geneva style translation. I did it in a more of an English Standard Version style translation for us, us modern folk, even though I'm older than you are. Let me read Romans 13, 1 through 7 with doing a little word replacement exercise.
Okay.
And this will illustrate, this is simply a word replacement exercise to illustrate what's wrong with a too straightforward of an interpretation of the passage. Now, let every person be subject to Hitler. For there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists Hitler resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For Hitler is not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of Hitler? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection not only to God's wrath, to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For the same reason you also pay taxes for the authorities, for the same reason you also pay taxes. For the authorities are ministers of God, attending to this very thing. Pay to all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. Now, honestly, when you do that little word replacement exercise, the problem should become obvious.
Yeah, I was going to say, which Bible version were you reading that out of? that must have been that Identity Bible.
That's the Third Reich version.
Okay.
You're making this wild hypothetical
to show that if you took it to its extreme, it's taken it totally out of context.
Exactly. Yes, because Romans 13, like everything else in the Bible, has a context.
Yes, it does.
And the context here is about who can serve as God's servant for your good, and why he should serve there, and what his job is, because Romans 12 that comes right before this is an explanation that our purpose is not to gather revenge for ourselves. It is to leave it to the civil authority to mete out justice. We are not to do it ourselves. And the fact is that revenge is not justice. Justice is something that serves God, because justice is an attribute of God's character. Now, the fact is that while God decreed that Hitler would sit on where he sat, the fact is that that was a judgment on not just Germany, but Europe in general, and that part of the world, including us. And that obviously Adolf Hitler, nor Joseph Stalin, nor any of the other dictators that have sat on these in these Pol Pot, Mao Zedong, Nikita Khrushchev, we can go through the long series of names. The fact is, these people were not servants of God for your good. The only part of the God's good that they served was the fact that they were teaching the people a lesson that they owed God their allegiance and their obedience. Otherwise, they would get leaders like this and continue to have them.
And you know, that's one of the, I want to kind of go back to that, because honestly, I don't think a lot of folks, when they look at this verse, they don't really think about it, and the fact that God does appoint civil governing authorities, because God appointed civil government. And those authorities, whether we love them or we hate them, they have a role to play. Now, I'll be the first to admit that a very large number of those civil governing authorities don't complete their duties in the way they should. Because if we look into these verses, we understand that these authorities that are ordained have their power and authority because God delegates it to them. Now, God delegates power, as you mentioned, for one of two reasons. It's either for blessing or for his wrath. And even that minister of God, you know, says that he does not bear the sword in vain because he is a minister of God. Now, how many times do we think of, say, your congressman, or maybe your U.S. senator, or maybe even the president of the United States, that his proper role in civil government is as a minister? And that word, it has the same meaning as what we would call a preacher or pastor, a minister, someone who is there to put forth God's plan in that sphere. And of course, the sphere we're talking about right now is civil government, because it talks about the fact that he is a minister of God for your good, or as the Geneva says, for thy wealth. It says, but if thou do evil, fear, for he bears not the sword for nothing, for he is the minister of God to take vengeance on him that doeth evil. Now, Chuck, you know, you and I have talked about this before, and I think maybe it's even in your article, that good and evil are not subjective terms. When the Bible when the Bible specifically uses the term good and evil, they are very objective, and they're objective within the context of what God has already decreed. And if you go back into the Old Testament and you look at the Ten Commandments, the thou shalt nots, negative law. And negative law is an important concept, and it's important throughout American history as well. But would you like to share on that just a little bit?
Yeah. Let's talk about that just for a second. There's a lot of stuff you left open there for me. So,
we'll take this into tomorrow's program as well.
I think we're going to have to, because we're down to about 30 seconds of time left.
all right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you what. Why don't you stay with us tomorrow to hear the answer to that question and for more of our discussion on how a Christian should approach our relationship with civil government. In other words, how do you interpret Romans 13? We'll be back tomorrow with more principles and policies. Stay, come back tomorrow at 5:30 to hear more on this topic.
Looking forward to seeing you tomorrow.